What's up, you guys, and welcome to the second episode of Why Monero, a Bitcoin maxi exploring the utility of Monero alongside that of Bitcoin. I'm very excited to have my first guest, Vikrant Sharma, founder of Cake Wallet, a Bitcoin and Monero mobile wallet. Now, I absolutely love Cake Wallet. I use it for the Monero that's donated to the show. I've started to use it for Bitcoin. It's super easy to use. It's a super clean interface. It's fully open sourced. It's pro-privacy. You can connect to your own Monero node. There is no Cake server that it connects to. It's got great UX, great UI. It's available for iOS and Android as of January of 2020. It's really one of the only places you can easily get Monero in the United States. And it really is almost a one-stop shop. You download the wallet. If you bought some Bitcoin so you could convert it to Monero, you can do it all within the app. And the app obviously stores your Monero. And candidly, when I was looking to get into Monero and looking to explore it, if not for Cake Wallet, I probably would have given up. It was an honor to have Vic on the show. And I hope you guys enjoy his insights into Bitcoin and Monero. Hey Vic, how's it going? It's a real honor to have you here and appreciate you taking the time to come on.
Yep. Thanks a lot, I appreciate it. It's an honor for me as well to be on. Just a quick note on your introduction. So Cake Wallet, of course, is a Monero and Bitcoin wallet. But on the exchange side, it does more than just Bitcoin and Monero. It supports 11 or 12 different currencies as well. So Litecoin, Ethereum, and some other coins as well.
Oh, nice. So you can change Bitcoin or Monero for any of those coins?
Right, exactly. And between themselves too. So you can do Litecoin, Ethereum, for example. The only thing is you have to use your own external wallet for those other currencies.
Got it. Okay, that makes sense. I've used it for the Bitcoin to Monero, but I haven't explored any of those other coins. So definitely a good note. So, you know, today has been a little bit of a wild day. I saw CoinDesk announced that Switzerland is now accepting Bitcoin for tax payments. I know pretty crazy. I know the Miami mayor has been exploring that as well. So it's crazy to see governments open that line. I feel like it's almost more government driven than it is citizen driven. I don't see a huge outpouring of people reaching out to their constituents and government requesting that, but it's impressive to be seeing that.
Definitely. I don't know if you read any of my AMA that I did on Reddit on Monday, and that's one of the things I was addressing, is that the governments can't stop the will of the people. Eventually they'll have to do what the people want, and I think that's what we're seeing right now.
Yeah, it's crazy that it's happening this early. You would have thought they would have put up a little bit more of a fight, and maybe that fight's coming, but it's great that we're almost building a regulatory moat around Bitcoin at the government level.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. As they say, it was inevitable.
Completely agree. What else has happened? Bitcoin's price has moved from 46K to about 55K in the past 5 days. It's risen 5,000 today alone. There are laser eyes and caps locks all over Twitter.
Yeah, I don't get that laser eye thing. I need to look it up. I think I missed the boat on that one.
No, I think it just happened today, and I'm sure someone out there will get you some laser eyes. If not, I can certainly do it pretty quickly here. But I'm not sure where that came from, but it's amazing. It really kind of shows you the network effect that Bitcoin has.
Exactly. I mean, it's fun. I think Pompliano tweeted that it's such a great day on Twitter for all Bitcoiners. And it really is. Feels like 2017 when we were all just sitting there in awe and just watching it go up every day by thousands of dollars. And we're seeing that now. And leaps are even bigger now. So it's really amazing. I mean, it kind of validates all cryptocurrency believers who have been, you know, preaching and talking, including myself, for me, last 8 years. But I know the original Bitcoin guys who were in there 10 years ago, you know, they've been talking and preaching about it for 10 years. So I think a lot of us feel validated, right? So which has been satisfying.
Well, it's been tricky too, because there were a lot of people that got caught up in that 2017 high, and you know, we had periods where Bitcoin was kind of floating between 3,000 to 4,000. So you were either, you had negative yield, or you were, you know, not even flat, best case scenario. And now, provided you held on to it, you're looking at, you know, you caught up on those gains that you otherwise would have lost.
Yeah, I mean, at the risk of saying this time it's different, but it really is different. I mean, back then in 2017, there was no institutional buyers. There was nobody talking about Wall Street. They were still making fun of it. And some people still wanted it banned. So again, at the risk of saying it's different this time, but it really is different this time. What's your thought on that?
I completely agree. It's very different this time. I mean, you look at a guy like Michael Saylor, which, you know, some people on Wall Street are probably saying this guy's batshit crazy. He just announced another $900 million in convertible senior notes and his latest kind of debt for Bitcoin strategy. So, I mean, he's up billions of dollars at this point. When you've got, you know, firms like BlackRock, was it, or Blackstone?
Exactly. Yeah, BlackRock.
BlackRock announcing that they're dabbling in Bitcoin, and then you've got government saying that they're going to start accepting it. It is very different this time. And the fact that it's only at 55,000, it's only, you know, a little more than double what it was in 2017 is really insane to me.
It is really insane. And just yesterday I was telling one of my friends that it's still early, still, you know, doesn't hurt to buy a little and hold on to it. I mean, when BlackRock says they're dabbling, I mean, BlackRock is managing what, $7 trillion under their management. And when they say dabbling, who knows how many billions that could be.
The fact that they're saying dabbling, they probably have maybe some indirect exposure, but they're exploring direct exposure. And as soon as they have that in their pocket, you know they're going to come out, announce it, and the price is just going to continue shooting up. Let's go ahead and dive into kind of, you know, you as the founder of Cake Wallet. Tell us about your background, how you got into cryptocurrency, what inspired you to create Cake Wallet.
So I've always been a techie, even though I've always been in the steel industry. And I think that stems from my childhood, the 80s, you know, programming on the Apple IIc. And then I also did electrical engineering for education. But then I joined the family business, which is in the steel industry, right away. But I always kept up with what's going on, reading every day. And I even had a small tech company in Pittsburgh in the late 90s, early 2000s. We had about 50 people. That did pretty well. So I've always kind of dabbled in tech projects and ventures. And in 2013, I learned about Bitcoin, and steel industry happened to be very slow that year. So I had a lot of time on my hands. And I just, you know, started watching videos and reading everything I could, watching many YouTube videos I can, trying to read everything, learn everything I can about it. And, you know, started mining even 2013, mined for about 2 years, bought an ASIC miner off of eBay. Actually, I'm still in touch with that guy who sold me the miner. That's the Bitcoin community, right? It's very tight. And then in 2017, I tried to make some transactions using my Coinbase account, and it was to a darknet address. And yeah, I wasn't buying anything illegal. It was just, I wanted to use Bitcoin, and Coinbase booted me off right away saying, you've sent Bitcoin to a blacklisted or some watched address or some word they use like that. And we're closing your account. So at that same time, a couple of things happened. One, I got a rude awakening of how open Bitcoin is. When they say open ledger, they mean open ledger. And another thing I learned in that, while I was on the darknet market, I saw that there's this coin called Monero. And I thought, why is there only Bitcoin and Monero? There's no Dash, there's no Litecoin, there's no Ethereum, there's nothing else. It's only Bitcoin and Monero. So I guess that was early 2017. And I started looking into Monero. What is this all about? And I went down the same rabbit hole as I did with Bitcoin. Again, started reading everything, trying to watch as many videos as I can. I thought, this is amazing. You get so much privacy, privacy on the sender side, privacy on the receiver side, privacy of the transacted amount. And I thought, okay, this is amazing. But there was no mobile wallet at that time. And a little after that, an Android wallet came out, but I didn't even know. So we just went to work right away at mid-2017, maybe mid to late 2017, and started building the iPhone wallet, and we launched in 2018. And there's a lot of pushback from the Monero community. Number one, we never pre-announced it. We didn't go to the community for any help or funding. You know, we did it all ourselves. We did it in a vacuum. Mm-hmm. And one of the main reasons we did it in a vacuum, to be honest with you, we didn't want to fail or fail publicly, I guess.
Right.
I say. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, you know, there was initial pushback on that we should be open source. And, you know, at that time, I didn't even know what open source meant. And the community helped us, actually educated us on what open source is and, you know, led us down the right path. And a couple of weeks later, we were open source and off we went.
That's awesome. And I want to take a step back a little bit. What was it in 2013, aside from the fact that the steel industry was a little slower that year, what really got you interested in Bitcoin? Was it the fact that it was a decentralized money? Was it a fact that it was a digital money? Was it the price appreciation? What was it that really inspired you to jump down the rabbit hole?
Initially, I mean, I was intrigued like everybody else when, you know, Bitcoin went to close to $1,000. It being a very tech-oriented thing happening and very much part of the tech community. And as I said earlier, I like to read and at least know what's going on. Mm-hmm. And so I wanted to know, hey, what is this Bitcoin thing? And after that initial question, what I found out about it, I liked it even more. I got even more into it. The decentralization was number one, and solving the double spend problem. And that was huge. To be able to take care of the double spend in a decentralized environment, it's a game changer. And it's something I realized early on, okay, this is big. This is, something's happened here. The world has changed here. You know, initially it was just, hey, this Bitcoin thing, hey, let's look into it, see what it's about. But then after learning what it's about, it blew my mind.
So it sounds a lot like the price got, you know, like everyone really, the price got you interested initially, and then the tech is really what kind of inspired you at the end of the day.
Definitely.
Let me ask you this. I'm kind of a former reformed gold bug myself, and I know traditional Indian heritage, there's a lot of ties back to gold. Did that play into your interest into a hard asset like Bitcoin at all?
No, not at all. I mean, I think I've always been, I wouldn't say anti-gold, but I never said to myself, oh, let me buy some gold or, you know, get into gold as an investment. Mm-hmm. I just never did it because, you know, I think a lot of people fail to realize gold was a representation of value. Itself, there's no value. And the reason humanity or the human race or whatever chose gold is similarly for the same reasons why you have Bitcoin. It can't be duplicated, and you know it's pretty finite. I mean, yeah, there is 1 or 2% growth of gold supply every year, but as far as we know, it's pretty close to being finite. So it can't be faked, it can't be duplicated, and it's a finite amount. And we thought, okay, rather than exchanging your chickens for my steak or whatever, my corn, and you know, I want corn, let's, or, you know, I want chickens, but you don't have chickens. So, you know, as business and commerce developed in our history, we had to find a medium of exchange where, okay, you don't want that thing that you're looking for, but at least you could get this medium of exchange and then exchange it for the thing that you really want. Mm-hmm. Right. So I always viewed gold that way, even before this whole cryptocurrency thing. I failed to see the value in it, except the, I failed to see, you know, a lot of people think it's like God's money or something, where I don't feel that. I feel it's something the human race chose to represent value as a medium of exchange because it has some certain characteristics. It doesn't decay. That's another one I forgot to mention. So gold doesn't decay, can't be duplicated, and there's a finite amount. So, you know, taking those things into account, it was a pretty solid medium of exchange. I mean, there's still gold coins from thousands of years ago, which are still being used. So for me, I know you meant, you said Indian heritage, and of course I'm Indian descendant, but, you know, I'm American as American can be. I've, you know, lived here my whole life. You know, in my mind, it's apple and or apple pie and baseball, right?
Fantastic.
Yeah, the gold thing never moved me. Never moved my wife. A lot of people will say, okay, well, I mean, if we want to get into the gold debate that goes on and on Twitter with Peter Schiff and and his followers, mm-hmm. yeah, it didn't move me. And it's kind of proven, right? I mean, over the last 10 years, what has gold done? Nothing. If it was truly a safe haven for the currency, I mean, we've gone through recessions and depressions and economic downturns. Gold hasn't shot up. People haven't run to gold for safety. And maybe at one time it was, maybe 100 years ago or whatever. I don't know. But I think now, if you can have those same characteristics, something that can't be faked, something that has a finite supply or close to finite supply, and we'll get into that with Monero, hopefully. But what, you know, thing Bitcoin has, or any cryptocurrency has over gold, is that it can be transferred quite easily. And that's a massive plus. You can send it across the globe in a matter of seconds. Maybe thanks to Elon Musk, we'll send it to Mars in a matter of seconds, minutes, I guess. Yeah. 8 minutes, I guess, yeah.
With the fact that what initially inspired you was Bitcoin, and I know you created CakeWallet because there was a market gap for Monero. Was it always the plan to add Bitcoin eventually?
It wasn't, actually. We wanted to focus on Monero and continue building the Monero wallet. But what we were seeing ever since we put the exchange partner in the wallet, about 95% of the exchanges that happen are from Bitcoin to Monero in CakeWallet. I mean, it seems people are coming to CakeWallet to convert from Bitcoin to Monero. And there was a lot of support issues because people had to use external wallets. They were using their Coinbase wallet or their Bread wallet, what have you. So it just made sense. The kind of volume we were seeing, it just made sense for us to put Bitcoin in. And the other thing, I mean, in hindsight, I mean, Bitcoin is Bitcoin. I mean, you cannot deny that. It is, it's most well known. It's pretty much become the face of cryptocurrency. Even Fluffy Pony and I talked about this at one of our Monero parties we had a couple of years ago in New York, that we may not like Bitcoin, the Monero community may not like Bitcoin, but the fact is we don't want it to fail because it is the face of cryptocurrency right now, or not fail now, as people are just learning and starting to get into cryptocurrency. If people are getting into cryptocurrency because of Bitcoin, fine. At least they're in, but I think eventually all paths lead to Monero. In the end, people, yeah, will get into Bitcoin. The more they learn, the more they use it, the more they realize how transparent it is, they will switch to Monero.
So 2 points I want to address there. Number one, you guys have really positioned yourselves great, because with the delisting that Monero has seen across so many exchanges, that has probably helped you guys enormously as far as getting people to download CakeWallet. And I think it really helps both Monero specifically that you guys are only Bitcoin and you're only Monero. Like, those are the two coins that you guys service. The perspective, you know, from the outside looking in is like, okay, these are the two coins that these developers, the founder, believes in. Would you say that's pretty accurate, or do you dabble elsewhere?
I may dabble elsewhere, just in the way of trading, or mm-hmm. you know, hey, let me buy this, who knows, maybe it'll go up, type of thing.
Right.
But is it something I want to use and promote long term? No, I haven't seen anything else that I like. And you know, I mean, we are Monero oriented, and I think we'll always be. Having said that, the Bitcoin wallet, I hate to pat ourselves on the back, but the Bitcoin wallet we make is pretty good. I mean, I'm hoping that it even attracts just Bitcoin people who just need a good, solid Bitcoin wallet to use. And that would be great. And then eventually they see, okay, when they go to create a Bitcoin wallet, they see this other option of Monero. And they learn, hey, what is this? Why does this wallet? The same question I had with the darknet markets, why only Bitcoin and Monero? So hopefully this user will see that and think, hey, why only these two coins? And maybe they'll go down the same rabbit hole and we'll have more Monero users.
I completely agree. I mean, that same line of thinking is exactly why I started to look into Monero I heard about Monero is being used on these dark nets and Bitcoin, you know, not so much, or it's just Bitcoin, it's just Monero. And I said, okay, well, why Monero? Like, I understand the risks behind doing it with Bitcoin, but like, what does Monero offer? And I went down that rabbit hole, and I feel like your wallet's going to inspire similar thoughts to kind of explore, okay, why is it just these two coins?
Right. I think so. And doing shows like this, like yours, and doing the AMA last week, after that, we actually do get a lot of new users that say, hey, I never even heard of you guys, or I never even heard of Monero, but now I'm into it. You know, so I'm trying to get the word out there. So hopefully the wallet will help, and what you're doing, what I'm doing, continue helping that cause.
100%. Yeah. What are you, I mean, you guys have been killing it with Cake Wallet and the features you've been building in. What are your long-term goals with Cake Wallet? Is it to, because I know one thing that almost no mobile wallet has, and I'm not a techie, so I don't even know if it's possible, but do you have plans of coin control for Bitcoin in the future or anything like that?
We do. You know, the list is long of all the features, but initially what we want is a fiat on-ramp. I mean, even if it's a fiat on-ramp using Bitcoin, and then people can convert their Bitcoin to Monero or whatever they want. The thing that we're working on now is that, and it'll be with a third party. And then eventually we want to have a fiat on-ramp directly to Monero. So those are the long, well, I guess the fiat to Monero is a long term. In terms of coin control for Bitcoin and all that, I don't know how many people are using that. I mean, how popular is it? We try to be a wallet for the noobs, you know, for the normies, for the non-techie people. So I really wonder, coin control, do you use it? I mean, how many people use it?
So I do, but, you know, obviously I'm a little bit more privacy centric, and I feel like the more, like, I was not always like that, but with everything that's happened in 2020, with all these, you know, the Patriot Act and all of these slowly, you know, snowballing effects where you're giving up your privacy daily is what made me look into coin control. I'm a user of Wasabi Wallet and CoinJoin. And I know something they're looking to implement, which hopefully will help, is kind of like an automatic CoinJoin when you use Wasabi. So, you know, I see, you know, it would be amazing if you guys became like the premier, like if you want privacy, whether it's Bitcoin or Monero, Cake Wallet's your guy. Cake Wallet's what you want to use.
Yeah. And when we talk of coin control and mixing and this and that, blah, blah, what do Monero people always say? Just use Monero.
Yep. You
know? You're going to jump through all these hoops, pay all these high fees. Just use Monero.
Completely agree with you there. So I did want to ask, I look at something like Cake Wallet, I'm like, oh my gosh, this is a fantastic wallet. Like, it's free to download. You can move value all over the place, and it's completely free. Like, how does that work? They've got a team. They've obviously got to maintain it. So something that I was curious about is, you know, how do you guys fund yourself? How are you able to make all these great improvements?
Initially, and for the long time, the last 2.5 years, my wife and I funded the development of Cake Wallet from day one. We don't have any VCs or anything like that. We're just us. We funded the whole thing. But ever since we introduced these third-party exchanges to do these conversions, those exchanges do share a fee with us.
Is that primarily it? I mean, I assume, like, you look at a company like Facebook and it's like, okay, it's free, but they're selling all of your data. Nothing like that?
No, nothing like that at all. And we don't have a server. Cake Wallet operates between your device and a node. And that could be a node of your choice, your own node. So there's no Cake server where information is being taken or logged. As far as Cake Wallet goes, we have nothing. We have no information of what you're doing. You know, maybe Apple or Google know who downloaded the app. That's about it. And the only information the exchanges might have is where the Bitcoin came from and where is the Monero going. So the exchanges have that information, but I've never heard of anything like that, them logging it or, you know, publishing that data.
I think it's really, you know, undersold with your wallet, really how private it is at the end of the day. You've got node control with Monero. Do you have that with Bitcoin as well? Can you connect to a full node if you're running it?
Right now, it's an Electrum-based wallet, so we are operating Electrum server. Mm-hmm. Actually, a bunch of Electrum servers, because one of the things I really wanted is just fast response. I didn't want the servers to be overloaded as people are using the Electrum servers. So they are Electrum servers that we operate for Bitcoin.
Got it. Okay. And if someone's using Bitcoin, they're probably not too concerned anyway.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, if it wasn't Electrum-based and they were just using some other format where you're connecting to a node, it's the same privacy. You're not losing anything.
Right, right. So,
or same lack of privacy.
Yeah, well said. So I want to jump into specifics of Bitcoin and Monero from your perspective. You know, a lot of people in the community, particularly the privacy coin community, you know, they have a lot of grief with Bitcoin because of the, you know, transparent nature of it. What problems do you really see that Bitcoin solves the best? You may have to give up your privacy, but, you know, what is the other side of that coin?
With Bitcoin?
Correct.
Well, I mean, the answer to that is use by the government. If you're paying taxes into a government and the government is spending that money, at least if it's they're doing with Bitcoin open ledger, everybody could see how your money is being spent. It's not going to, you know, funding some CIA operation where, you know, running guns or funding insurgents in different parts of the world or whatever you're against. So the answer, and somebody had an answer to that answer, you know, this is where I see Bitcoin being useful in government transactions, so that people can see where their money is going. But then the answer to that is, they can if they were using Monero, they can choose to reveal and open those transactions to the public. But then again, it comes down to, will they choose to reveal those transactions? So I think Bitcoin for the government, Monero for the people.
Got it. Yeah. So it almost sounds like Bitcoin's biggest strength is also its biggest weakness in some ways.
100%. Yep. It's a double-edged sword.
So what about Monero? What problems, and I think there's an obvious answer here, but what problems do you believe Monero solves at the end of the day?
From something completely simple and safe, like you just want your privacy. You don't want to reveal your balance. You don't want somebody to track all your transactions and know your spending habits and know all your parties that you've transacted with. Even if you're not doing anything illegal or dangerous, you get that privacy. As they say, when you mail a letter, you do put it in an envelope, right? You just don't mail it open and have it, you know, open for everybody to read it. So not all privacy is nefarious. Not all reasons for privacy are nefarious. So Monero solves that problem of just simple privacy. You just want to live your life and not you're not doing anything illegal. You're not evading taxes. You just want to have some privacy, and then you can have a little more extreme things, which fortunately people in the U.S. we haven't seen those. Or maybe, let's say, and Fluffy Pony brought this up in a recent interview, domestic abuse. What if you're a victim of domestic abuse and you're slowly stashing cash away because you want to get away? You want to keep that private. You don't want anyone to know you're doing that, right? You know, you say you're a freedom fighter and you're fighting against a oppressive regime, and you want to be able to fund some things without having this oppressive regime know what you're doing.
Makes complete sense. I was thinking about this the other day, and I was like, you know, Bitcoin and even more so Monero, it's kind of like the Second Amendment, where you are really protecting yourself from government. Mm-hmm. At the end of the day, it's a right to bear arms, either whether it's a, you know, a gun for your personal life protection or if it's your money. Mm-hmm. For your fiscal protection.
Yeah, and it's interesting you bring a gun. Yeah, bring guns up because it's a tool, right? Any tool can be used for good or evil. Mm-hmm. So I think the same thing with cryptocurrencies, and we've seen that with Bitcoin. Bitcoin itself was started in the darknet markets and, you know, Silk Road, that whole thing. And Bitcoin itself used to be known as a drug coin. Oh, isn't that the drug coin? Isn't that used for illegal stuff? But look at it now. It's being listed next to the NASDAQ and the Dow price on CNBC at the bottom right of the screen. So your next question, I think, would be, well, what about Monero? So I think the same thing will happen with Monero that happened with Bitcoin. A lot of a lot of fear, a lot of uncertainty right now because people don't understand it. The proper regulations aren't put in place for it. And as we move forward, I think those things will happen because you can't go against the will of the people.
Completely agree with you. And there's this thought, especially in the Bitcoin community, that money will always converge toward one thing. So I'm curious, you said something earlier, all paths lead to Monero. Do you believe that Bitcoin, Monero, a mix of the two are going to exist? Or do you think Bitcoin's going to eventually adopt some sort of fungibility on a second layer, or Monero is going to maybe make it easier to audit the supply? What's your long-term view between the two?
You know, there's definitely two schools of thought on this. You know, some people believe there can only be one cryptocurrency and has to be that. And some people say, well, we're already living in that world and there's multiple cryptocurrencies. And you have multiple currencies around the world, right? You have euros, you have dollars, you have this and that. For a long time, I used to think there has to be one currency, but not anymore. I don't think so. I think if there's an exchange option, people should be free to use whatever they want. But then I should be free to accept it or not accept it. For example, Monero people, we won't take Bitcoin, right? We just won't take it from anybody because we don't want the risk of it being tainted. And we ask for Monero. So I mean, that's a tough question. And when you say, will there be one cryptocurrency in the future? I mean, what is the future? 5 years from now, 100 years from now? So I guess the answer to that would be, we're living in a world with multiple cryptocurrencies. It's happening. It's happened.
I guess maybe the better question is, which one will be viewed as money at the end of the day? Will it be Bitcoin, Monero, something else entirely different?
I guess whatever you're willing to accept that has value, that you feel has value, that would be money to you.
Fair enough.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's amazing to me, and I haven't looked at it recently, but you know, Monero is below, you know, number 15 in market cap, which there are no privacy coins above 15, which blows my mind. What do you think is Monero's biggest obstacle to adoption, or any privacy coin for that matter?
I think these big exchanges like Coinbase, Gemini, the two of the biggest in the US, they really serve as a marketing arm for these altcoins, even though I don't consider Monero an altcoin. So I think that alone, if Monero is listed on Coinbase or Gemini, two of the big ones in the US, you know, I think that alone would increase the price of Monero. So I think that's a huge problem. You can see that phenomena with other coins that got listed on Coinbase. As soon as they get listed, the price goes up. Mm-hmm. So the exposure is not there for Monero. And maybe that's why CakeWallet does so well. People don't know. People don't know about Monero. And they, when they do learn about Monero, the biggest question I get asked is, how do I get it? All my friends say that. You keep talking about Monero, but how the hell do I get it? I don't see it on Coinbase. I don't see it on Gemini. Mm-hmm. So I think that's been the big problem more than anything, is there's no exposure. And since these exchanges are not listing it, and it's known as darknet type of coin right now, some people just stay away. And they fear it. And for a lot of people, this cryptocurrency is just an investment. The number go up. They're just looking to make money. If it's not on Coinbase or Gemini, then they don't care. Who cares? Mm-hmm. They don't care. So I think that's been the biggest problem with Monero. It's just exposure. I mean, we just have one exchange in the US that does fiat on-ramp, and that's Kraken in the US. I don't know if you agree with that viewpoint, but that's what I think. Because any coin that's been listed on Coinbase has done well. There's some shitty ones, of course, yeah.
BSV and BCH? Ethereum, maybe. But
exactly.
And we're going to kind of get into the traits of Bitcoin and Monero. Do you see Monero as a threat to Bitcoin, or as maybe a tool to enhance privacy only when needed?
It's definitely a threat to Bitcoin. You're very much in the Monero world, and you know, and that Monero world is growing. There's new members, new people coming in. It's definitely a threat to Bitcoin. You hear it today. Hey, don't send me Bitcoin. Send me Monero. Even when I'm paying one of our marketing people or developers and stuff, and they want Bitcoin, I'm like, I'd rather not send you Bitcoin. I'd rather send you Monero. Yeah.
So you essentially buy into the store of value narrative for Monero then, that, you know, there is a hard supply cap. There's no hidden inflation bug. You have a good amount of confidence in that.
Yes.
Because in my opinion, that is probably the biggest hurdle that people have as a Bitcoiner looking into Monero. Okay, there's a way to look at the supply, but you've got to trust the math. You've got to trust the cryptography, which in my mind, it's not that big of a stretch. If you're trusting the cryptography in Bitcoin, you can just as easily in some ways trust the cryptography in Monero.
Right, so but let me ask you this question. Bitcoin has 21 million. Have you verified it? Has a person buying it on Coinbase or Gemini, have they looked at the code? Have they gone through the GitHub, the repo of Bitcoin and gone through and said, yes, look, there's only 21 million. So they're trusting the consensus to say, yes, there's only 21 million Bitcoin, right? So now, and how would you do that? You'd have to learn coding or understand computer languages, who knows? So what do? You trust the consensus. You trust majority of the people are saying, yes, we've looked at the code and there's only 21 million Bitcoin. And you say, oh, okay, good, everybody's saying that. So for me, that also plays a big part in Monero, that all these PhDs in Monero Research Lab and all these brilliant minds in Monero core team and the core devs and people not on the either any of those teams, but they're just very smart, brilliant people that are in the Monero space. And they're saying, yes, this auditing tool is correct. So there's a consensus, a majority of the Monero folks are saying, yes, this auditing tool is correct. We've looked into it and it's fine. So for a non-techie person, a non-programmer, that's really only thing you can rely on. Until somebody comes tomorrow and says, hey, no, I looked at the Bitcoin code and the software and it's not 21 million. They've been lying to us, you know, but the nature of cryptocurrency being decentralized and everything is on a consensus basis, you know, approving transactions, approving balance, everything is on a consensus. So why not this also?
That's a really good point. I mean, like if you're testing gold, say, and you've got one of those machines that can verify whether it's gold or not, you're trusting that machine at the end of the day. You don't really know what it's doing on the back end to verify it, but you're inherently trusting that. And I don't think that's much different than, you know, running a line of code on a Bitcoin, on the Bitcoin command line or the Monero command line for that matter.
Going with your analogy, if the majority of the gold people said, yes, this tool is accurate for a test to see if this is gold, then you're like, okay, most of the people say it's good, so I'll use it. I'm purely looking at it from a non-techie standpoint, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, if you're hardcore techie, you can go ahead and rip the code apart and see what's going on. But most of the people out there aren't, and they're trusting the consensus.
Very true. So with that line of thinking, what initiatives, if any, do you believe are vital for Monero to succeed and eventually get adopted? Is it increased accessibility? Is it increased usage outside of the darknet?
Mm-hmm. On the tech front, you know, just from 2017, when I learned about Monero to today, there's been radical improvements, significant improvements to Monero, which have improved verification times, drastically lowered transaction fees, you know, miners fees. They used to be up to, you know, over $2 any type of transaction. And after bullet proofs and some other things, that transaction fees come down under a penny. They've done the pruning of the, so bullet proofs also reduce the size of the transaction so that the blockchain is growing at a slower rate. And then they've also done pruning on the blockchain, so you could further reduce the size of your blockchain on your hard drive. You know, just in 2.5 years or 3 years, we've seen these massive changes, and you probably see on the roadmap and things like that on getmonero.org or the Reddit that, you know, there's lots of things in the works which are going to further improve all these things. So It's hard to say. I mean, everything you imagined three years ago to now, there's been such drastic changes. Let's see what's in store for the next 3 years for Monero. The place where Monero could improve for the user, it's that 20-minute lockup period. And that's, I think, our biggest support request. Hey, I sent Monero and it went down to zero. What's going on? Why is my balance zero? I'd like to see that addressed at some point, somehow in the future. And, you know, for anything you say, okay, that's not possible today, and then somebody finds a solution 3 years later. And such great minds are working on Monero. I think that'll improve also. And any brilliant mind can jump in there and say, hey, I got an improvement for this feature. So that can happen.
You said it best, truly brilliant minds working on Monero. The tech is unbelievable. It's really a dark horse coming in to the cryptocurrency space, I think. It's relatively unknown. There's this strange imagery associated with it, with these dark nets. But when you look into the underlying technology, it's very different from Bitcoin, ranging from Dandelion to bulletproofs to the ability to have opt-out privacy. What's your favorite feature of Monero?
One thing which a lot of these privacy coins could not do and were not doing, I don't know how many of them are doing this now. What I love about Monero is that the privacy you get on all platforms, whether you're sending from a mobile wallet, desktop wallet, or an exchange, it's the same thing. It's the same protocol. And you're getting the same level of privacy on those transactions. And you probably see me tweet that many times. I say Monero, all the privacy, all the time, and on all platforms. I know some other privacy coins, if you wanted their privacy, then you had to use their desktop wallet or, you know, do some other mumbo jumbo. I like that about Monero. Everything is done at the base layer. That makes it functional and available on all platforms. That's my favorite feature.
Where do you see Monero in 10 years relative to fiat and relative to Bitcoin?
This space, crypto space, is so new and it's changing rapidly. I mean, you could never say, oh, something better won't come around. So I think it's foolish to say that this is it. This is the end. I don't feel that's correct. I think we're at the very beginning. But the way Monero has gone in the last 3-4 years and the things that are planned for it for the next couple of years, I see it retaining its dominance as a privacy coin and for the unseeable future. I wouldn't want to put a time on it, 10 years, 20 years, 30 years, but the way it's going, I don't see why it wouldn't continue its dominance.
So you had mentioned earlier, you said one of the biggest issues is, you know, really the accessibility and exposure that Monero has. What's your opinion on the whole Monero for Tesla campaign that was going on? I know this was a huge, huge, two different schools of thoughts from the community, it looked like.
Well, I was one of the funders for the Monero for Tesla.
Oh, really?
I funded the CSS, yeah. There's actually three of us. And then when we put it up, we already had it in our mind that we're going to fund this, three of us. But when we put it up, I guess some more people ended up donating also, which shows the power of the Monero community. I mean, reading a lot of the Reddit comments, people thought we're trying to like pull a fast one. I don't know. It was just like, hey, wouldn't it be cool if we do this? Yeah, let's do it as CSS or whatever it's called, and make it into a Monero community thing. It wasn't out there to use the Monero community. And it's not like we did it under the Cake Wallet name or these two other guys did under their name. Mm-hmm. There was no personal benefit. We wanted to do it as a Monero community. Looking back, and I made an official statement on this on Reddit. I don't know if you saw it. Looking back, should it have been the CSS, the funding thing for Monero? No, probably not. Looking back, the three or four people that wanted to do this, we should have just, you know, found a escrow person, put our money in there. And, you know, anybody from the Monero community could have served as an escrow for the funds and launched the campaign. And even in that case, we would have said, hey, Monero is doing this. Because the question is, what people said the Monero community didn't agree. What is the community? Anybody that's ever used Monero or has a slight interest in Monero? Do we need to get a vote from everybody that's somehow involved in Monero? It's not like you get a membership number, member card, and you go and vote. on all Monero activities. So I think that's kind of strange that some backlash was that argument, which didn't make sense to me. And like, okay, well, who are the Monero community? Am I not a part of the Monero community?
Right. So, if there are people out there willing to fund a certain initiative, it's not like you guys were trying to do a hard fork to Monero or something. You guys were trying to increase its exposure. So, you know, I was a little surprised by the backlash as well that I saw.
Yeah. And but that didn't bother me. I mean, the backlash, fine. Some people don't like that type of marketing. That's okay. But what bothered me was that being accused that we're trying to pull a fast one or fool people. That was, I don't even see where or how that even comes in. And I even wrote about it, that people that think that, they're actually showing their mentality more than what we were actually trying to do. Ours was a good natured fun. Mm-hmm. Hey, let's do this and let's put it out there. And it's still live. I mean, we haven't taken the money back. It's still there. I'm probably going to start marketing again from the Cake account and from my personal account.
Yeah, I hear you there. Let's see here. And I know, and this is something that I appreciate about the Monero community, is that, you know, they're not all about number go up necessarily. They're not always talking about price.
I love that.
What do you think? And, you know, I hate to go into it, but it's almost hard to avoid at this point with the last week and a half. I mean, you know, I was looking at it when I first started learning about it, and it was floating around, I think, 130 to 150. And all of a sudden we've gone up by $100. What do you think is really driving that? Is it the improvements in tech? Is it Grayscale's announcement of the Monero Trust or something else entirely different? Are we riding the curtails of Bitcoin?
Well, I mean, all respectable or decent cryptocurrency are going up in terms of dollars or whatever jurisdiction you're in. So, I mean, I think overall the market is just up. You know, there's just a massive interest in cryptocurrency, number one. Number two, Monero is being used. It is being used. So people are acquiring it and using it. And you can't say that for any other currency. I mean, even with Bitcoin, people are just hoarding Bitcoin. We're just buying it and hoarding it. Nobody wants to. And you see that. You see people comment and tweet that all the time. I'll never spend my Bitcoin. I'll never sell my Bitcoin. Whereas Monero is the real currency. And if Bitcoin is that hoard and store of value and hoard, then we still need a cryptocurrency for the people that it was meant to be. And I think that cryptocurrency is Monero, and that's being proven by its use.
You mean it's not Dogecoin?
Yeah, it's kind of bizarre with Elon. I mean, I'm a big, big fan of Elon Musk. I mean, I think he's done amazing things with, you know, PayPal and then Tesla and SpaceX and the Boring Company. And I mean, he's just, but this Dogecoin thing, I mean, the richest guy in the world, why play this joke on people? You know, I just feel it's not funny anymore. People lost money buying Doge.
Yeah, I don't know what's going on there, because it's interesting. He first got on Clubhouse. He did this Clubhouse thing where he was talking, and he literally says in there, yeah, Dogecoin's a joke. It was made as a joke. I promoted as a joke. And he's like, I have to be careful what I say because I moved the market. And then not a week later, he's promoting Dogecoin, saying it's the people's currency. I mean,
and not just one tweet. He must have tweeted about Doge 15 times, 20 times. I don't know. Yeah,
it's beyond me. But
yeah, I think it's a little irresponsible for his position.
Mm-hmm. Agree with you there. And, you know, maybe there's some ulterior reasoning. We'll find out later on, but can't make sense of it right now anyway.
He was distracting everybody away from Bitcoin so he can stack up.
Yeah.
Stack those sats.
Exactly. So I know we're pushing on an hour. Two more questions just to wrap up here. What's next for you? With Cake, with maybe just your exploration of Monero?
I mean, right now, you know, we're still in the building stage. Cake Wallet, I'm going to continue building, want to make it easier and easier to use Monero, make it easier to acquire Monero, make it easier to use Monero in, you know, third-party services, which I think the cryptocurrency community can benefit from. Like we added the exchange, we're going to add the fiat on-ramp, you know, maybe we'll add other services where Monero And now Bitcoin can be used within the wallet. You know, in the end, the wallet is the tool to interact with cryptocurrency. Mm-hmm. That's going to be how else do you interact with cryptocurrency? It is the wallet. So we just want to make sure that that experience for the user is simple and clean, that anybody can use it. You don't have to be a techie. So continue building on that. I mean, I think we're very focused and we don't want to get distracted with too many other things. Mm-hmm. And we have, you know, we've got, I don't know, 20 things we want to do in the wallet, from little minor things of, hey, changing this color up to, you know, doing something much, much bigger. So, but at the same time, we have to be flexible. This cryptocurrency space is new. It's fast changing. And you have to adapt. You have to make a decision to adapt. You have to make a decision to pivot when needed. So those are things we keep reminding ourselves every day. It's a balance you're fighting all the time. You want to do things right and move fast enough, or, you know, you don't want to do everything, make it super perfect, but, you know, take forever doing it. So that's a internal battle we have all the time, actually. Like, okay, hey, this is good enough. Let's put it out there. Or not, you know, no, let's not, no, let's make this more perfect. Oh, let's keep working on it. It's like an oil painting. When are you done?
Right.
When are you done with this?
Good point. Yeah. Well, Vic, it's been an absolute pleasure. I appreciate the time you've taken to come on the show, talk us through kind of your thoughts on Monero, Bitcoin, hear everything going on with Cake Wallet. How can our users find or follow you online?
Number one, you can go to our website, cakewallet.com. You can follow us on Twitter, which is just @CakeWallet. You can follow me, which is Vikrant, my full first name, and then NYC as in New York City. We have a Telegram channel, cake_wallet. And Reddit, you can follow us on Reddit. We have a subreddit, which is just CakeWallet, r/CakeWallet.
Fantastic. Thanks. Well, thank you again, Vic.
Thanks.
I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it as well.
Thank you. Thank you. I will catch you next time. All right, guys. Well, that is the show. I hope you enjoyed it. I'm a huge advocate for the project, for everything they do for the community. So a big thank you to Vic and the Cake Wallet team. Appreciate everything you guys are doing and keep up the good work. To everyone else, I hope you enjoyed the show. If you have any comments, feel free to send them over to the Tyler Durden account or the Y Monero account on Twitter. Thank you, and I'll see you guys on the next one.